This podcast presentation is brought to you by Creative Disturbance, a project from the ArtSci Lab of the University of Texas at Dallas.
Hi, this is Matej Vakula with BioCollider Podcast, second episode. Today, I will bring you an interview with scholar, researcher, and an artist, Dalila Honorato. She is currently assistant professor in aesthetics and visual semiotics at the Department of Audiovisual Arts at the Ionian University in Greece, where she is one of the founding members of the Interactive Arts Lab. Dalila is the head of the organizing committee of the conference Taboo, Transgression, Transcendence in Art and Science, and a developer of the studies program concept of Corfu Summer School in Hybrid Arts. Besides teaching at the undergraduate and graduate programs, she also advises doctoral and postdoc candidates developing their research in arts practices. She is a guest faculty at the PhD studies program of the Institutum Studiorum Humanitatis in Alma Mater Europaea, Slovenia, and a guest member of the Science Art Philosophy Lab integrated in the Center of Philosophy of Sciences of the University of Lisbon. She is a commissar of FemMeeting, Women in Art, Science, and Technology, which launched in 2018, and it's organized by Cultivamos Cultura Portugal. We will be talking about the TTT conference, the Taboo Transgression and Transcendence in Art and Science, and also about the FemMeeting I just mentioned. We will also talk about Dalila's bio-art project called Parts on the Agency of Surgical Leftovers. This project is concerned with tissue leftovers after surgical procedures, obviously. I have known Dalila for more than a year. We, I think, met first time at RPI, but then also in Mexico City at a TTT conference, and then again around upstate New York. She is great, and she has a lot of deep, interesting insights in things that matter.
And now, without further ado, I am giving you Dalila Honorato.
Whatever I do is connected with my personal story. It's a not exactly a selfish nature. It's more like it makes sense because it sounds more truthful. I am a theorist, so I do teach theory, but I don't feel comfortable just repeating or trying to chew what others have written because they're genius and they're great. Obviously, it's good to connect and somehow be grounded. It's always good to have a good excuse. That guy said it, not me. But I do believe that one should have their own experiences and try to wrap them up. In this sense, maybe it's because I love so much ancient philosophy. I'm very much into Aristotle. So just start connecting dots in your own real environment, and then you probably will reach a consensus. And maybe you can talk with a minimum level of conscience. Okay. So, many years ago, I was interested in two things. I was interested in anatomy, as how the body moves, and I was interested in how to use my body to be persuasive and convincing. And this is like 30 years ago. The idea seemed to have remained inside of me and have followed my own personal story. And suddenly, when I less expected, there I was having a a very early middle age crisis and trying to find out in my own professional field, okay, I'm teaching those things. Yes, I have a PhD in this field, but what is it that I like to do that will let me be, well, sincere, you know, and maybe have some kind of originality, if one can even try to reach that. So somehow around 2014, I started thinking about what can I do in my work further than teaching, further than following, orders. And maybe I can actually create something and generate an interest in Corfu. Corfu is not exactly the cosmopolitan center where contemporary artists would hang around, except if they wanted to have, a cocktail and swim. It's a beautiful place to go, but it's very much connected to the 19th century. And that's it. My students are dealing with audiovisual art. And it seemed that we were going too much towards gadgets, technology, not really content, and detachment from your own body. I mean, the attachment would come through tactile technology, probably. And there I was saying, like, you know, acting is really important, and maybe some puppetry is really important because you can actually do better animation by knowing this and understanding why a person reacts in this emotional way. If you're drawing, if you're... Some people would say, yeah, you're right. Some other people would say, eh. Okay. But it's a small university and everybody's doing quite a unique work. So we don't have much supporters. And that was the main initial plan, to actually switch the balance of the digital field in Corfu and to provide to my students maybe another type of contact. So that was the birth of the first symposium, which is not TTT, but I think it is the birth of something that would happen. Metamorphosis of Corporeality, and then it has some subtitle, Art, Body, Technology, because I had to put those two words there. And, there were some interesting people showing up. It kind of provided another, other topics to be discussed, like gender reassignment, for example. You know, and everybody was kind of thinking, but this is not exactly audiovisual arts. And I said, calm down and just let it flow. Maybe it will have some repercussion. So in a way, it's like calling your own tribe too, because you need to find a way of connecting and finding people that can understand maybe your worries, maybe your way of thinking, or not, but definitely having more company. So this started giving me some confidence too that, hey, okay, I'm not that crazy. This is actually possible. And yes, people will come to Corfu without any problem. It developed slowly. It took me 2 years to put TTT on, from 2014. So TTT started in the winter of 2015 as some sort of a song. So by then, I was enjoying my sabbatical, as I am now. And I knew that the moment I would go back to Corfu, I would be organizing a festival and a conference. So there was a need for somehow a thematics that would give some bright and color to what I was trying to do for the first time. To me, it was a very important moment because I never had tried to lead the festival. And the festival has many details that I am not entitled to represent. Like, I'm not recognized as an artist. I'm not recognized as a person dealing with technology. So I had to collaborate as much as possible and to find a topic that would somehow be an outsider to everybody, but also that I could, well, enjoy. So then you have the first word that appears in TTT is the middle word, the transgression. I was very sure that I wanted to have some bad boys and girls and whatever, human beings and non-humans showing up in Corfu. I was very sure that I wanted to have something that would have objectively quality. And so that you do some scientific word without being criticized, right? The second word that showed up is a transgression what, right? In art and science, I was sure that that should be the field because it can be whatever, right? And it's not digital arts, but much farther than that. And taboo was the second word. It just sounded so good, so exotic, so Freudian in a way. And it also has to do with anthropology, which is a field that I absolutely love. And then somehow there was this need for a happy end, because you have taboo, you have transgression, and then somehow transcendence, which is one of my favorite words when I was studying philosophy, seemed to close up somehow that idea. I just like too much number three, and probably I enjoy too much the triad of Hegel, you know, thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. I was needing a synthesis there that would give birth to another problem, another issue. When the idea for TTT showed up, but of course it didn't show up as I'm going to do this for a couple of years. No, I'm going to do this now, and hopefully it will work out. It did work out. It worked out pretty well. And we had some interesting people advertising it. We had some interesting people showing up in Corfu. And we were lucky enough to have some amazing guests. Like, we had Roy Ascott and Stellar, the same.
They were the first?
They were the first two keynotes. And I think it was just a way of saying, okay, this is it. And maybe some people have some doubts concerning what we're trying to bring to Corfu, but this is undeniably, you know, a pair of people or a set of people that have something to say. And they're on the topic of art. And yes, there is technology. Okay. So it seems that our guests actually liked it. And one day, I think it was Roy Ascott grabbed Stellark and the head of department and me and said, you know what, you should continue this. So I'm very thankful for that support. You know, when you're lacking some confidence, you're trying to do something, so someone else tells you, yeah, you should do this. So we're going to, for the fourth TTT next year in November. And let's see where we're going next, if there is a next one. But it seems that there will be a next one. Okay. It's good to see your network growing. And when I'm talking about network, I'm not talking in a bureaucratic way. Or let me open my book of contacts and check who I can suck today.
LinkedIn.
Yeah. I'm very thankful to everybody who tries to show up at TTT, because we do not have a very good economic situation. We started in Greece. You couldn't have much better. But not to complain too much. Okay, next time in Vienna. Let's see how it will develop. I don't know if you would like me to add something on concerning, well, TTT. Well, we have published, and that is a good thing, I think. I always try to have at least one volume that is on a free ebook format. The last 2 years, we have published part of our text with Technoetic Arts Journal. The initial idea coming from Rory Ascott was actually that TTT should be a publication by itself too. So maybe I should put myself to work on that. But he was kind enough to offer one of his three issues, annual issues, for the publication of the text. And that always helps someone who's fighting academia, you know, to be published on a journal or not on an open ebook. TTT has been allowing me to meet interesting people and also to be tested concerning strengths, patience, and just being better, just not worrying too much about things that are not that important, and allowing also a set of students, it might be mine, but the last time were people in Mexico doing their PhD, to connect with speakers coming from different countries. FEM meeting happens between the second and the third TTT, the first FEM meeting. And it was not supposed to be FEM meeting. It was supposed to be something like, how about we have all our friends coming to Portugal and, you know, have a blast and exchange ideas? I said, yes, that's very good.
That was 2000.
That was 2018. And the invitation happened inside of a car. And I was sitting on the back seat. And Marta de Menezes, the Portuguese bio artist, was driving. And she asked me, how about this and this? And I said, sure, that's great. And so I'm very grateful again that she met me through TTT, the second one in Corfu, and felt that we connected that somehow. And we're both Portuguese, so that makes communication quite interesting. And we're actually coming from villages that are 18 kilometers apart. And this was something it took us like most of our like 40 years to understand, that there was another person that we were interested in doing things together. So Marta asked this, and how about co-curating this with me and co-curating also a long-term performance with a lot of women involved. And this was the farm. It was a double invitation. It developed into FEM meeting because somehow when you call it a conference, people working in academia can ask for funding. Or when you're affiliated in an institution for research, you can ask for funding to do the traveling. It might sound really, really ridiculous to be confessing this right now, but it also made us more demanding towards ourselves. So that is not only a meeting, it's actually structured to be a conference with a unique part of a set of an environment. So first of all, it's a FEM meeting because it's Women in Art, Science, and Technology. I have to say that we're not very strict on our concept of women, and this was one of the things we have been fighting. If you consider yourself a woman, please show up. Checking genitals is not one thing that we do. We leave that for the Vatican and the Pope. And this year, we have the second FEM meeting. So one after the other. It's scaring because it's another baby that is growing, and it seems to be... I don't know. Personally speaking, last year I felt that it was one of the most important things I've done in my life. And maybe I'm being super exaggerating things, but it was a complete bless, delight, and humble to see the group of women that came to Portugal last year. And we're talking about 70 women from 36 or 37 different countries. And we have the same number this year and a lot of new people showing up. So it's not a repetition, you know, it's the communities getting larger. We're not trying to fight to, let's go women, la 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 la. No, let's go women, yes. But let's talk about what we're doing, and let's talk about how we do it, And let's see if there's someone else doing something that maybe we can connect with. We're very demanding concerning our host. We need a swimming pool. And we like to be in a place where there are not many distractions. So it has to be a small village. It's very interesting to see a group of 70 women invading a village that has 500 people. And anyway, you cannot lose the other one and the other, you know. You keep meeting each other. There's a lot of laughing. There's a lot of, well, there's some crying too. There's some emotionals flowing. And let's see how this year will go. And if we will continue or not, we have invitations to do fan meeting in different places. Most probably in 2 years we'll be in Turkey. And that's what I see. If it will happen before, I do not know. It will depend on the meeting this year. But it is exciting, and I'm excited. A lot of work, too.
Do you guys have, like, some, like, dedicated themes every year? Or?
No. And this is one of the questions that we also receive. Like, what is the topic? And you are the topic. It's Women in Art and Science and Technology, not because we're talking about women that have worked. It's not an historical research on women and how, you know, it's not regaining pages that have not been written in history books. It's actually just the recognition that there's a lot of women right now working in the field of art science. A lot of women working in different, as curators, teaching, as artists. So everybody together and just talk about what you're doing. It's very auto-ethnographic in a way. That's why it's so hard, because you have to stand on your own feet and talk like for 10 minutes, which is a short time, about what you do. Most of the connections and interesting talkings happen next to the swimming pool after the talks. So it's not a rigid conference. It's a serious one, but not one that follows all the rules of questions from the audience. Because I don't know about you, but I'm pretty slow coming up with questions, and I admire people that have like 5 questions on their pocket, but I'm not that kind. It takes me like half a day to digest the entire and process the entire conversation. Maybe because it's not my first language. Most of the conferences are not in Portuguese, and this actually is a tool language, is a tool, so hey. So we're being patient.
So this is English, is the like
English is the language that unites. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is interesting also in these two sets happening in Portugal is that we try to include the local community, meaning, yes, it is art and science. Yes, there are many women working in labs and coming, but we also have, because technology is something that it's not only high tech. Technology is also hitting a stone with a certain shape on a surface and produce, you know, it's a tool, any kind of tool. So we have women working in more traditional art forms like ceramics or fabrics joining us and talking about what you're doing in the areas that are close to the place where fan meeting takes place. It's not exactly an Airbnb approach, like come and meet the local artisans. It's more like a very honest and humble acceptance that art and science are so much wider. Right? Somewhere in between, I don't know, the second and the third TTT, and somewhere after the first fan meeting, I actually started feeling like, okay, maybe I'm producing too many events and maybe I should really start focusing now that I know what I'm really passionate about. Maybe I should start writing. And I'm a social scientist. So what we do is that we are very annoying to a lot of people. It's not just, again, it's not just a question of reading, you know, you have to try not to do human experiments, because you're not supposed to, but you can do interviews and try to make very hard questions to people so that they can reconsider what they're doing. And so I was, since 2014 and the symposium on metamorphosis of corporeality, I was very interested in what one can do with your own body. I'm also very concerned about property, wrong books during my teenage. And
wrong books, meaning you mean like forbidden books, sort of, or just like
what do you mean forbidden books?
Or what do you mean by wrong books?
Okay, you see what I do? Okay. I mean books that are uncomfortable to certain ideologies. Like, they're not forbidden. The Social Contract, that's Jean-Jacques Rousseau. It's a pretty mainstream book. But it is somehow hardcore, you know, when he tries to explain that property is actually really wrong and entitlement to being a space is probably the beginning of a lot of shit happening. So usually I'm more like, okay, I don't care what you have. Really don't. But it's good if you own your own body. So the research had to be somehow connected with the body. Anatomy, remember? So, and also my personal story. I had a minor surgery and had to reconsider a situation. What is a surgery? What is a surgery that is made on your own body? What is cutting? What is, you know, being, going through that process? What is being vulnerable? What is the fragility of actually being put to sleep or not? And from this very philosophical thinking, other issues showed up. Like, okay, so during my surgery, a piece of myself will be chopped. Is it mine after being chopped or not? Can I ask for it? Maybe I want to do hamburgers afterwards. Maybe I want to, I don't know, put it on a nail in the on a wall and call it whatever. Maybe I want to pay someone with my own flesh for some old debt. But all these maybes that are ridiculous in most cases, they make they make sense to me because I have the right to ask those things because it is, after all, a piece that was attached to me. So I started asking all this before the cut. And also because I was kind of frustrated with my own body and really, really angry. Yes, with myself. Because it was something that was not working. And how do you dare not to? I'm a perfectionist, you know, in opposition to certain people. When things are not working, I tend to self-blame. It's not original. A lot of people do that, especially people who have to face surgery. So either they hate their own piece of body or they start feeling, I don't know, different things. But there's a lot of self-hate, a lot of asking why is it that I'm, you know, I've survived and some other people don't survive. There are many things that can be discussed. And then I asked someone else who had a friend of mine who had her own adventure with surgery. And she actually told me that she had the same issues. And this one takes the other. And then you start planning your own research. So I think there's a question here that should be made concerning control, concerning property, concerning agency of your body parts, the ones that become detached through surgery. And I think it's also a conversation that the medical community should have, or at least the patient should start with the doctor. And one of the most interesting things that I found out through my readings was that, legally speaking, not much is being said about your surgical leftovers. I hate this word, but it's important to say it. Most of the leftovers, they end up as medical waste. So it's not a question of recycling. It's not a question of organ donation. Okay. But there is nothing written legally that can forbid you from reclaiming your own body parts, except if you have been exposed to chemo or radiation. In that sense, there's some sort of concern. And I also know that some other situations, such as you give birth, you want to keep your placenta. In some countries, women have been forbidden from keeping their placenta. So it has, and in Europe, I have to say. So it seemed to me that this conversation was important to have. So this is the interesting part about my research. Of course, I can start planning to have human subjects, maybe asking for some forms of consent and follow good, examples. But to me, the most interesting is actually starting the dialogue and making the questions, putting those questions and also convincing someone that they should be the ones to decide what to do with their own body parts. Most of the time I'm saying like, oh, you can take pictures if you want, or you can dry them. And then I say like, well, I actually did some pieces of jewelry. You have your kitchen, you can do so many things. And it's an interesting process to deal with your body part once it's cut from yourself, because you're trying to heal what it remains of you, your whole body. And you're also seeing the process of transformation of what is outside of you, of what does not belong to you. So it's a process also of letting go and detachment. It's not a process of conserving, of keeping it with you. Not that sick. It's more like a healthy process of seeing, oh, so this is me. Oh, so this is what happens.
And the jewelry is interesting itself also in general, because it's like almost something that you almost want to become part of your body, yeah, but not exactly. So you just keep it on the surface.
Yeah, that was the main idea, that it should be something that what is a body part? Usually it's inside of you, or it's, of course, it can be a hand, no more exposed. But in most of the small surgeries, I'm dealing with cases such as gynecological issues. So those parts are usually covered. So yes, there's this double meaning of what is covered to be uncovered, and what is kept somehow in shame to be shameless outside. And it is kind of interesting to keep it also, to give it a chance to be somehow in contact with your body, but not attached to it.
Do you see some relation between the, like a sort of church reliquary kind of stuff? You know, the fingers of the saints or...
Only if you believe in self-healing. It's not a process of preserving the shape, because when you have a finger of a saint, you try to keep it as a finger, because the amazing part of the reliquary is actually that, oh, this was a tongue and it's still a tongue and you can see it was a tongue. No one is actually taking the tongue, slicing it, shaping it in the form of a pyramid, and putting it on the top of a hat. I would find that really interesting. You know, it's also a process of consciously, on a conscious way, you are objectifying yourself. You are making a part of you an object. So it's losing its importance, but it's being recycled and it's regaining importance somehow in another shape. It can be seen as a form of, you can keep it and believe it has magic powers and say, okay, this can heal, or this is my talisman, or this is, it's a symbol. But you can also give it away. For my own body parts, I did two pieces. One of them, I gave it away. I gave it to someone. The other part, I kept it with me. It's not something that I go and check every day, but I know it's there. And maybe I'll give it away. Maybe I'll lose it. Maybe it will have its own road, its own development.
It's is it some sort of jewelry you can wear? Like, is it a ring or a necklace? Or?
I have a ring, and the ring I gave away, and I have earrings. This is the piece that I kept. There are two. But you can do whatever you want. Depends on the body part that you have. I think it's cool just to take some pictures on the microscope and check how it is. But it is important to go there. It's so weird to touch your body once it's outside. Sometimes it's even weird to touch your body while it's attached. But when it's cut, it's like, you know, when you... I felt that I was dealing with chicken, you know, before cooking. And I had to think about what tools do I want to use. You know, so chopsticks were my favorite, but I was wearing gloves. I was trying. So you're creating a sort of a ritual or a process to connect or reconnect with what is not connected anymore. And it's a personal story. I believe very much in a narrative and reshaping narrative so that things make sense. Sometimes they're so absurd that you might hear the most scientific or logical explanation, but that's not, it doesn't convince you.
But just often they're trying to sort of kill the original narrative and reinstate different narrative in the scientific like data or parts or whatever they study, objects.
Yeah. But you know that's there. You know that's a possibility. But there's somehow a need for a myth. There's a need for magic. There's this need also to be, what do you call this? Be strong enough, be confident enough that whatever you decide that it goes, it has the same value than whatever other people say that is a truth. So it's always this process of not, of course, living in the same planet, if possible, with everybody else, but just deciding what you want to believe in and questioning it at the same time and comparing. This has developed into another part, not only surgery and body parts, but also has spread towards fluids because it seems that, at least as a woman, I have a common experience with other women concerning stains on clothes and underwear. So this is the funny part of the research is what I call the Dirty Panties Project. And it's based on the medicalization and sanitization of whatever flows out of a woman's body. And sorry for being so woman-focused, but I do not have the embodied experience as a guy. Of course, I'm willing to work with male fluids, but at this point, I'm just having too much fun creating a sort of a code to read the future of female fluids in dirty panties, like tea reading or, you know, coffee reading and tarot. I think it makes as much sense as anything else.
Oh, that sounds very interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any questions.
I don't have any extra additional questions, but is there anything you find interesting you'd like to share I didn't ask? Or I should have had asked?
I know. We need a chapter two, a second season sometime.
Yeah, yeah, because we are already 40 minutes.
Oh, you have a question.
Oh, there is a question. Look at that.
Oh, my gosh.
Your guys are great. This is good. This is good.
I was looking for some details from TTT or film meeting, like actual stories from what you not just produced, but actually experienced. And or if you want to get to the edge of what you can tell us about what happened on the farm and the edge of where the telling stops. Either just some experiential, like what impressed you at FEMMI? What are some stories from the front? Like what was happening at TGT that really blew you away? But also, what are you allowed to tell us about having a
farm? Okay, the farm is the name, the short name for the long-term group performance, all the names of the participants can be found online. The artist who leads the project is Isabel Burratti. She's Belgian-Chilean, and she works with female ejaculation. And her project is on the possibility of doing DIY cosmetics with your own fluids for your own healing. Again, the idea of recycling. And I met Isabel on the second TTT. And when I met Isabel, I also met Hege Tapio. And Hege is working again with, let's say, the reuse of human fat to the production of fuel for the locomotion of machines, cars, whatever. And we had a talk. So anyway, and maybe in the future we'll do something together, like opening a shop with, you know, alternative forms of body development. I can't say much more about the farm. We have stated there's an agreement to the protection, actually, of the rights of the participants. It's not so much something saying that you should do this or you should do that, but mostly a guarantee on behalf of the artist that your identity, your personality, your limits, whatever, will be protected. But we have a verbal agreement, oral, you know, old-fashioned thing, face-to-face. We will not break the required silence, because this is a working process. Isabel has done another farm, and she will be doing this and again. So it's a good thing to keep. But the only thing I can say is that it's an important process to go through, especially in the Western world, because the idea of female sexuality is so repressed and everybody's so alienated, that we have lost the ability to learn from the previous generation. I don't know how it was in your case, but probably the only thing that our parents tell us is, this is a condom, and this is how to use it. If you're lucky, you will have a demonstration on a banana or something. There's a lot of know-how, though, that is lost. Like, this is how you masturbate, and you will have a happy end. I think with boys seeing more, with boys, you might have a group masturbation thing. And I'm not saying that this is what happened in the farm. Do not get me wrong. But it's the idea of sharing knowledge. Think about how different the genitals of a boy and a girl are. It's very rare to have girls peeing together, but you can have lots of boys on a row peeing together. That's the way the installation is done, the public bathroom, divided by genders. So you always have the possibility of comparing as a boy what you have with that what other boys have. You can also have, in some cultures, have the facility of just taking off your shirt. We're not all nudists and naturists. No. And even some of them, the ones that are, they actually are very traditional with their children. So girls do not have the same easy going. And believe me, when girls get together, they do not talk about boys so much. So it's very rare to have the opportunity of talking about your own doubts, because you don't know if there's a reason to have them. So the farm provides, besides knowledge about how to collect and transform your fluids, whatever fluids, okay? I'm not talking about only and specifically about female ejaculation, but we have fluids such as the period, you know, your nose has fluids.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. So your body parts have different fluids that can be recycled. So the farm provides you also a platform to just find out that having doubts is not that weird, and no one really has any idea of what is happening with your own body. So it's a mystery, the way, you know, the farm is a mystery, but it's also a way, once you're there, to demystify a lot of things. And it's called a farm because it's based on, I would say, capitalist, anti-capitalist process by putting the human on the same level of the non-human. So we're all animals collecting and producing to the farm manager. Okay.
I like the name. That's great.
Yeah, it's a kind of, it's very intense. Because it's a 1 week program, and there's a time in which you sleep, but almost all your day has, you know, every hour has an activity. So it's disturbing, and there are a lot of fights. It's not easy to remain there, and obviously some people feel uncomfortable and have to leave because it's too much to deal with. It's not only a game, it's connected with your body, and it's connected with what, again, the idea of shame, the idea of pleasure, the idea of pain, the idea of blah, 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 many things. Yeah. Yeah, but you make very close friends. That much I can guarantee. From the front of TTT? Well, I said the misbehaving, right? Bad boys and girls, which are actually excellent people. So they always misbehave, and I cannot talk about that. Otherwise, you know, I cannot keep doing this for a long time. But I actually find interesting the way some branches of society resist to being a little bit poked. For example, when it happened the first time in Kofu, there was a reaction from the extreme right against the university for allowing such a topic with such activities to happen. And this was spread through the web. And of course, you kind of feel a little bit afraid because you don't want to be the object of, you know, talk in any right or extreme right or whatever. And it reaches to the topic.
Potential to violence to the right, extreme right.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially if you're a foreigner, you will consider this twice. But anyway, it was too much talk. So far, nothing really happened. At the same time, it was also hilarious and so comforting. Because suddenly, you know, you have your name and then two other names attached. One of them is Mr. Adam Zaretsky for how do you dare take blending pieces of raw goat next to the, you know, the student's restaurant. And talking about balls and genitals and whatever. And the other name was Stellark, and how do you dare to have as a guest speaker someone who hangs himself, you know, and what example is this? So the lack of knowledge was exposed, And I was just super thrilled. I wish this was written in English and not in Greek so that I could put it on my CV as, hey, my name is being attached to those two names and it's pretty cool. So a shameful situation. I wouldn't say that we had much more reactions. It's always awkward. There are always different moments of awkwardness. The second TTT, there were lots of topics about shit. And I had some reactions from the academic field.
It was also Corfu?
It was also Corfu. And the interesting part is that when you react, you have to say why. And saying, like, it's disgusting or this is not proper, it's not enough. You have to say why. And I can't say that it was not proper, because it was super proper, because it was very well explained, too, by different artists and different theoreticians also curating this type of work. It was not the main topic, but somehow we had, like, maybe 1/6 of presentations covering this topic. Disgust is an interesting emotion, right? So at least you know, and it's very truthful, you can't avoid it. So again, I was very happy that this happened. And it also gave me the courage, and it also provide the conference a network to be hosted outside of Corfu. So that's much I can say. Local disgust can guide you to export your own shit. And suddenly, you're spreading the word. So what else can I say besides that, you know, just going further is the best you can do when you start receiving critics. I can't say much more. As I said, there were lots of little things happening under the umbrella of TTT. We always try to have a summer school, for example, to involve more students. Most of the students involved, they have a super nice time as volunteers. And they come back. So I think the main objective, which in the beginning, which was to provide a more consistent vision of art, science, and the international art scene he's doing, was covered. Maybe the participants would like to share their dirty laundry, but I'm not talking more about it. It's just, that's a fun.
Great, thank you. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast were solely that of the speakers and does not necessarily represent that of the RSci Lab or its employees.